And a bit like you, I have a similar process. I stick a decal. Edit that out.
No, I will not.
Don't set me up every week. Anyway.
Sorry, you've done it now. You don't have to do it again. That's my outtake. Hello and welcome back.
Thanks for joining us for another episode.
I am Malcolm Childs.
And I am James Skiffins. And we are Just Making Conversation.
Hello, James. Where we would discuss the ins and outs of the model-making hobby that brings us joy and pain in equal measure.
From the greasy sprues to the gloss coats and everything in between, we're going to be Just Making Conversation.
There are other podcasts that you can listen to.
Plastic Model Mojo.
The Scale Model Podcast.
Plastic Posse Podcast.
On the Bench.
Model Geeks.
The Sprue Cutters Union.
Small Subjects.
And Built Sideways. Just head to modelpodcasts.com for all of the links. Did I read the wrong bit?
Yeah.
Sorry. Doesn't matter. It sounded great.
Go on, then.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, not likely. If you've enjoyed our podcast, consider leaving a review or 5 stars, as it promotes this podcast to more people to enjoy.
Showing your support to us is easy as making a cup of coffee. Why not go over to buymeacoffee.com/JMC podcast and do just that. Your support will help go towards making this podcast and its contents just a little bit better.
/ Ninja slash.
In this episode, we're just making conversation about common mistakes and fixes. Those repeating messes that we see every time someone starts up the hobby again and again and again and again and again and again and again.
They're easily fixable, easily avoidable, and completely understandable. We've all been there when we started out, so we know what it's like to facepalm.
Is there a way we can stop these mistakes from happening, or is it part of the course? Learning from mistakes is the best way to learn. No?
It sounds a bit Spanish, isn't it? Is it not the best way to learn, no? It is very hard to admit your mistakes. Admit that something has gone wrong and an error has occurred. But sharing those errors, gaffes, miscalculations, and slip-ups lets us know you are human and there is always a fix to learn.
So, Malcolm, today's subject is mistakes.
Yep.
Cock-ups.
Yes.
Errors.
Mm-hmm.
Do you make a lot of them?
Do I make mistakes? Yes, I do. Lots of mistakes. And I learned early on in this hobby, there is no point hiding your mistakes. There's no point. Sorry, I don't mean hiding. I mean not discussing your mistakes, you know. Mm-hmm. Everybody makes mistakes. We're all human beings. We all put the wrong thing on the wrong thing and go, bugger, how am I going to fit that? In fact, there's probably not a model kit that I've built that has not got one mistake in it somewhere or something that went, can't be bothered now to, you know, I've got to a point where I just can't be bothered to fix that now.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to move on, you know, and I've had my fill. My patience has been extended and worn thin. And flattened out like a long piece of aluminium foil. Did you know that they make aluminium foil from aluminium blocks?
Yes.
And then they just keep on squashing it and squashing it and squashing it. That's like my patience. When it gets too thin, I'm like, you know, I'm just going to finish it.
Yep.
And that might be like, you know, have to re-glue the undercarriage for the 60th time. And on the second one, I thought, you know, I really should pin these. Nope. Add more glue.
Yes.
No one will see it. It's underneath. Add more glue.
That's right. Well, you haven't painted it. It's underneath, so it doesn't matter, does it?
And then, of course, it's I've put so much glue on this, I've ruined it so much, it's now going to be a crash diorama.
I think at the end of the day, yeah, we all make mistakes. Of course, I do. Anyone that watches me live will see that I make them live.
Yes.
I'm that good.
But yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, we all make mistakes, don't we?
Yeah, no, it's part of it. I learned a long time ago the phrase that basically, if you don't make a mistake, you're not making models.
Ooh, like that. Who said that?
I did, just now. I am somebody who constantly batters himself, as you know. My other side of me batters myself all the time about, oh, you're doing that wrong, and, you know, oh, stressed about this, stressed about that. Mm-hmm. And I have to remind myself at the end of the day, it's all part of the hobby, it's all part of the fun. Or was it someone said to me this week, I made a comment, oh, no, it was in the live stream, we did a live stream, didn't we, for Models for Heroes. And someone said, if you will choose to go all out on a kit, you're going to make errors and it's going to be difficult. Stop whinging. Well, he didn't say stop whinging, but yeah.
It was something like, if you choose the difficult path, you're going to have a rocky time or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, I knew it was really cool.
It was something like that. And I guess you just have to remind yourself that you're taking on this big project. And yeah, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be rocky. No one is expecting you to do it perfectly first time. Not one human being is expecting that at all. So you need to sort of stop putting so much pressure on yourself and be nice and kind to yourself, because we like to watch you not be bullied by yourself.
I think that's the most important part that needs to come across on this podcast, is that, you know, we all make mistakes. If you freely admit them and speak to people, modelers that are similar level to you or more experienced, and say, I'm having this issue, I don't know what I'm doing, blah, 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 people will help you. The community will always help you. Remember that if you're not making a mistake, you're not building a model. You're not challenging yourself enough. Mm. So, and it can be simple things, can't it? I mean, it can be like, you know, as simple as if you've got an airbrush and you're using it for the first few times, you're bound to, once you've got it, spraying it in a nice way, you'll be really chuffed with yourself. And then a couple of weeks later, you'll be moaning and groaning about the fact you spent all this money on this amazing tool that doesn't work properly, and et cetera, et cetera. We've all been there. We all do it. It still happens to me.
Well, how do you mean that's a mistake then? It's, you've done something wrong to the airbrush, you mean?
Yeah, oh, you've not cleaned it properly. Yeah. 9 times out of 10, that's all it is. You've just tried to, you maybe rushed it, or maybe you've become a little bit complacent in your cleaning regime, and you've missed that very small speck of paint that's going to give you a little bit of problems.
Yeah.
Dried in your airbrush. So, you know, like I say, it's fine. It happens. And if you speak to someone, it'll always be the first thing that comes up in a Facebook feed.
Yeah.
My airbrush is spitting. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing that someone will say is, have you cleaned it? And of course I've cleaned it. What do you think? I'm silly.
Oh, that's a good idea. I didn't think of that. But it's always the way. It's always the way. Oh, you haven't cleaned it properly. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I just looked and I hadn't. you know, when your mum says, let's see your hands. Have you washed your hands? And yes, of course I have. No, you haven't. Yeah.
And again, like you just said, you know, we all put too much pressure on ourselves. It's a hobby. You're enjoying it. If it's being stressful for whatever reason, walk away from it for a little bit, whether it be a cup of tea, sit in the garden, or talk to the wife, or whatever, or a couple of days maybe. Sometimes you need a couple of days away from it to come back at it fresh.
Yeah, let it all cool off. One of the mistakes that I keep on making, and I don't know why I keep doing it, when you get something very, very small and it's on the sprue and you end up cutting the part off rather than the sprue gate. So you then have to then fix it somehow. Because once you cut it, you know, it's difficult to put it back on. I mean, luckily it's plastic and everything glues, but it's still very, very annoying. It's got half the part still on the bloody sprue. And I keep doing that, and I don't know whether it's just my clippers or whether I'm just not looking and rushing it or what, but I seem to do that constantly these days.
I suspect what you're doing is you're trying to cut the sprue gate too close to the part.
Mm.
Because a lot of us will take off a piece from the sprue and try and get it as close as we can to the part, so there's less tidying, less cleanup before you can glue that bit.
Yeah, I try and do that all the time, yeah.
Yeah, well, don't. No, do totally the opposite. Cut it off so you've got the part of the sprue gate on the piece, and then trim it down.
right, so you cut way too big so that you don't cut too much off for the first time. I'm with you. Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm doing. That is definitely what I'm doing. What I end up doing is you'll have, I don't know, I'll have a post, and on the end of the post is like a light or something smaller, like a, you know, a spinning blue light or something. I don't know. And I think that's the gate, and I end up cutting that bit off. That's what we're talking about. Right. Should change that. I will try not to make that mistake.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I'm guilty of it too, all the time. But I have to try and remind myself. And 9 times out of 10 when it happens, if I'm honest, I've got into a bit of a role with what I'm like, the section that I'm building, and I'm like, oh yeah, I need that bit. Click, click, click. Oh, what have I done? Yeah, and that's all it is. Just take a little bit more time. Also, by doing that, the other thing to remember as well, with your nippers.
By what?
With your nippers, your cutters that you're using to cut your sprue with.
Gotcha. I thought you said something else.
Remember, over time, you may have accidentally, on purpose, used it to cut something other than sprue.
No.
Or you may have damaged the blade in some way because you've been a bit too greedy. And the way around it, there's two ways around it, is, like I say, cut a little bit away from the part and then tidy it down to the part. The other way is to do that, exactly that, but invest in having two cutters.
Mm.
One where you cut through the big lumpy bit of plastic, and the other bit where you trim down to your part. It's a bit fiddly, and I mean, the cutters aren't super expensive, but it might be worth having, because, you know, I think we've all been there where we've cut a bit of photo etch off with a nipper than we shouldn't have, or, you know, cut a bit of wire or whatever, and they go, oh, I shouldn't have done that. I really should have just reached across from my other tool.
Well, maybe we'd never learn. That's the trouble, you know? If we did learn from all of our mistakes, then we should be perfect by now.
We're human beings. The problem is we'll always take the easy option. And I'll be honest, Malcolm.
You can be honest.
The only reason that's popped into my head is because I watched a video, which I can't remember who it was. And I think it was your, it doesn't say who it is, but I'm suspiciously thinking it is the scale model medic.
Oh, yeah, John.
And he actually says to do that.
Yeah, there you go.
So, yeah, it is a thing.
It's a thing. Cool.
Yeah.
Are there mistakes that you make all the time, constantly, 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 and you kick yourself for it? Or are there mistakes that you never make now because you've learnt from them and you've blazoned it into your brain, you've tattooed it on your forehead not to do this certain thing?
I think there's a couple of ones that I repeat.
Hmm.
Like I say, one of the, like, similar to you in getting carried away and rushing.
Yeah.
Talking about rushing, that's something in which is probably a really good thing to talk about as well, is that if you got to a certain part on a stage of your kit, and you've got to go in because mum's calling you in for your dinner. you've got to go and walk the garden, walk the cat or whatever. And you think to yourself, I'll just do that last bit. Don't. Stop. Stop at that point. Give yourself plenty of time. This week, funny enough, I've not been in the at the bench very much because it's been incredibly hot, which, you know, I know you guys over in hot countries will just be mystified by this, but the room that I have has a concrete roof, and it stores the heat. I mean, we had some very high temperatures 2 days ago, and my room is still 32 degrees in here, and it is 10 o'clock at night. So I want to do some model making, couldn't because it's a little bit too stuffy for me. So I've been getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go to work, and I've come downstairs to do a little bit of something, of which, again, not allowing enough time, I decided to do a bit of painting.
Oh.
Yeah, not a good idea.
Oh, dear. Well, you can repaint.
Oh, yes, there's been a little bit of repainting and touching up and stuff. But, yeah, just allow yourself enough time. Don't rush it. The build will progress.
But it's fun, though, isn't it? It's fun. It is,
and I'll be honest, while I'm saying this in this way, it's actually been quite positive for me this week, because I've been very frustrated because I'm not moving forward with my build. And I came in here and spent, during the day when it was really hot, I spent like half an hour clipping bits off and putting them on crocodile clips ready for painting. Mm-hmm. And then decided I wouldn't paint. And then just coming down and spending that 20 minutes doing a bit of painting actually made me feel really good for the rest of the day, because I've moved forward. So
yeah, little tiny steps, little and often.
Probably my biggest repeat mistakes is something that came up again in something we were talking about the other day, which was decals.
Oh, yeah.
And to ensure that you don't get your sealed ring and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Whack one down on the surface of the model. Then I'll go to the next one. But as I'm doing the next one, I go back and add a little bit more solution over the top to make sure it's properly and all that stuff. And you just tend to, I tend to repeat that process as I go along with all the decals and just keep going back to where I started, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, me too.
But one of my biggest mistakes that I feel I make is that the last ones don't get the same amount of attention, because the first ones have been repeatedly played with.
No, gotcha.
And the last one is neglected a little bit.
Yeah, I'm with you. What I do is when I go up to the bank to the next time after deckling, I would then go around again. So you're right. The last one doesn't get as much love as the first ones. You've got to decide that that's enough when you put your next gloss coat on ready for weathering, haven't you? You've got to decide, okay, it's not silvered, I'm happy with them.
As long as you try and remember, once it's on, you know, if you're doing one side of the aircraft and you do the second side, you then go back to the first side and fiddle around with that a bit. And
yeah.
And on top of that, over-fiddling.
Yes, it's not good for you.
That's one of my biggest errors, is I'll over-fiddle, especially with roundels and that sort of thing. I'll fiddle and fiddle and fiddle. Oh, now it's all starting to fall apart, you idiot.
Yeah, and then you're just trying to scramble back uphill again.
Yeah, that's probably one of my most common mistakes. And I suppose the other one is just a general thing, actually, because it can be any, it covers most of the model. Taking shortcuts. I have to try and remember. I really must put a post-it note up on the side. Stop. Don't do a shortcut or something like that.
Yeah.
Shortcuts don't work. Yeah. The amount of times I do is try and do a shortcut and then go, oh my goodness sake. And I've got to spend 2 hours to put that right. Or I've got to start again, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I did, funnily enough, on the Hellcat I'm doing at the moment, I did, it's got some cutaway panels. And I want the panels to be around because it will be on a diorama, but I can't use the kit parts because they are like super, super thick.
Right.
Although I just suddenly thought of a way in which I could get around that. But I'm not going to do that. It's far too easy. Sorry, I just suddenly, why don't I just sand the things down to the right thickness? Yeah, I never thought of that. Anyway, in my infinite wisdom, I decided to use a little bit of brass.
Yeah.
And I've cut to the right size, all lovely. Shaped to the right shape, all lovely. And then went in it with a riveting tool to recreate the riveting. Used a bit of Dynatape to give me a proper edge. So I didn't go wobbly lining all over the place and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And done most of the panel, looked perfect. And then there's a little section. There's a little square section. And again, cut corners. Oh, I don't need that. I can do that free hat. Oh, no, I can't.
Yeah.
So now I've got to start again. But yeah, preparation, poor preparation and all that.
Mm.
Avoid that at all costs, because it will just create a lot more work for yourself.
One thing that I do that I want to learn to stop, and I think I've kind of got it now, but it has taken me a very long time, when it comes to putting my base coat over my pre-shade layer, if I'm doing aircraft or anything with significant paneling, because I start putting the base coat on and I go, oh, this is good. I enjoy this process. Oh, this is so good. I've not stopped and now completely painted over everything that I'd done previously. And then I have to decide whether I'm going to darken down that base color or lighten that base color so I can do, you know, add that shading in again. But the last aircraft that I airbrushed, which was the 32nd Spitfire, gosh, that was a while ago, blimey, that I made a conscious effort to spray the base coat, let it dry, look at it later. Spray the base coat, let it dry, look at it later. And it was a long process, but it worked. And I think it looks great. I'm really happy with it. But I didn't enjoy the spraying of the paint as much. Does that make sense? I didn't.
It does, yeah.
I didn't kind of like lose myself in the art of putting paint down, you know? So maybe it's something that just, you know, comes with practice and experience. So now I've done it. Hopefully it's kind of locked in my brain now. You know, this is when you stop. And I can enjoy that process. Maybe I just need to get it out of my system. You know, spray a load of stuff, paint a couple of cutting mats green, and then you start painting your aircraft and things.
Do you do pre-shading?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so what you're saying is when you do your pre-shading, you put too much coat in to lose the pre-shading?
Oh, yeah, my base coat, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so I'll give you a challenge.
Oh, good.
Why don't you reverse the process?
Yes. So that's exactly what I'm saying, is that my base coat will then have to be lighter or slightly darker in places to post-shade instead of pre-shade. But yeah. What I'm saying is I've already pre-shaded it, so what? I don't need to post-shade it.
Oh, gotcha. Right, okay.
You know? Otherwise, I could just go and prime a base coat and then worked on it.
Yeah. I mean, I used to do the pre-shading, and I always used to get really frustrated because, like you, I would flood over the what I'd done and go, well, what was the point of me doing that? I don't get it. So what I did was the opposite. Was I'd put a base coat on, and then I would go over it with lighter shades to pick out panels, etc. And almost to a point now, I've got to the point where I try and go into every panel and lighten the insides of the panels to create the effect of the darker edges without actually using any panel liner.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because you can build up your colours. You have to have a little bit of control over the airbrush, obviously.
Yeah, and I guess you have to make a lot of mistakes, don't you, to get to that point.
Yeah, but the mistakes are easy because you make a mistake, you just paint over it.
Yes, yeah.
So that's what I found frustrating, was the fact that I'd effectively done the detail and now I painted over it and lost all the detail.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how I got around that personally. That is a common mistake with most people. Because I remember seeing an awful lot of posts from people saying, I don't understand this pre-shading business. What's that all about?
What about beginner mistakes? What mistakes do you see if you're teaching someone new to the hobby? They show you their first tank they've done, 166 tank. What's the usual mistakes you see? I can think of a couple.
Sticky fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah, finger marks. That's always a classic. And using the glues. In fact, actually, I have to give him a shout out. The Scale Model Medic. He recently again? Did. Yeah, I'm gonna again because I was very impressed with the video. He did a starter kit, one of the new ones, and he used pretty much everything that was in the kit. As the build, because it was filmed for Airfix, I guess. But I've also seen a couple of people do the starter kit challenge, where you buy a starter kit and all you can use is what comes with the box. That's it. And now we all poo-poo it because we all like our tammy and thin. But obviously, the starter kits come with a nice tube of glue, works perfectly fine. And as a beginner, your first mistake you're going to make is you're going to get that tube and you're going to squeeze it along the edge of the fuselage, put three times, four times the amount of glue that you actually need, etc., etc. And you know, a real, real good tip, on your box, as you open the box, there's a little card tag in that opening that's folds into it to hold the opening bit. rip that off, roll it up into a tube so it gives you a point, put the glue onto the other tab from the other side, and then use the pointy tab to then apply the glue onto the model.
Right.
How simple is that?
It's clever. Yeah.
Never thought of that ever.
Doesn't say that on the box, though, on the instructions, does it?
Doesn't. And Airfix, if you are watching or listening, maybe you should suggest that in your instructions.
Yeah.
Because it's an amazing tip. And it's made me actually rethink. Because obviously you can get your, I mean, Humbrol do one now, but Contact, Rebel Contact with the little needle. But it's the same principle. Mm-hmm. Cocktail stick, if you've got a cocktail stick, use that if you want. But yeah, you can still use that glue. And if you are a beginner, top tip. If you're going to teach somebody, top tip, make sure that's what they do.
You were saying the first thing that people do is put their glue down the fuselage. But the first thing they do is they stick that seat to the cockpit bay floor with way too much glue.
Yeah.
You know, so immediately it's all sticky. And then they try and stick the canopy on with the same glue.
Yeah.
And it all goes... You think, oh, all that time I spent putting the rudder pedals in, and now it's gone all cloudy.
Yeah.
You end up just going through the same thing. Okay, this is what you need to do with the fumes of that glue. This is the glue you need to use. It's like a very strong PVA or something similar, and that won't destroy the canopy. And the amount of times I've had to say that, but you don't say it on the instructions.
No.
Does it? I'm sure it doesn't say, like, be careful of your glue and your clear parts.
It's only in the last couple of years that I've used a canopy glue. I've always used normal glue and never had a problem.
Well, that's interesting. I have had a problem. I did do that myself when I started, and someone said to me it was the fumes. So what I did is I used extra thin. I just blow on it. As it dries, the blowing action of my lips blowing the air blows the fumes away from the canopy.
Yeah.
So much it sticks, but it doesn't fog it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what other people have done or found, but that's what I seem to do. And I don't use PVA on my canopy anymore.
Mm. Yeah. As long as you don't trap a load of fumes inside the canopy, you won't have that problem. The easy solution to it, to avoid it all completely, is a bit of canopy glue, like you say. It's just a strong PVA. Yeah. But yeah, that and obviously the other big failing with glue is fingerprints.
Yeah.
You know, you use too much glue. I've seen it as well, where people are using extra thin and they're holding the fuselage together and dipping using the capillary action, look at me with big long words, with their fingers far too close to the edge. And then they pull their fingers away and go, oh, it's stuck. Ah,
yeah. Hate this hobby. I'm going to go back skiing instead.
Yeah. Again, it's a time thing. Just take a little bit of time. Don't glue so much of a large area. Do small bits at a time. It will hold.
I quite like the fingerprints thing, though. It makes me chuckle. Because I still do it all the time. You know, I think I'm being very careful. I've got my fingers. I'm holding the fuselage of my aircraft or the tank like a magician, trying to hold all my fingers out so that nothing can get stuck or whatever. And I still manage to do it. So I like to leave the fingerprints in now so you can prove that it's my model.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, that's it. You know, at the end of the day, you just own it, don't you? You know, it's my mistake, my fingers, and it's my model, so.
Yeah, you're going to get prints taken off it, and you know for a fact it's mine.
I find that I have much more problems with PE, with glue, than I do in anything else.
Is it because of the size?
Not necessarily. It's just more of a case of impatience more than anything else. You know, super glues, they dry at different speeds. I've had all sorts of types of different glues, but I tend to find even, you know, especially when you've only got 3 seconds. You try and stick that piece on, and you're like, got it, lovely. Ah, no, it's still on my finger. Damn it.
Where's it gone?
And then trying to clean it up with, got 3 layers of my skin, look. That and another common mistake is sanding. It might come as a bit of a surprise to some people listening, but sanding is quite often a really easy place to make mistakes, because some of us don't have necessarily all the right tools. So some of us might use, through many reasons, be it budget or just because that's what you've got at hand, using a sanding block or piece of sandpaper or whatever, that the grit is too harsh and you end up taking off far too much. But Paul Bretland is a really good advocate of this, because I remember a long time ago, I used to have this problem all the time. And then he has a product where he has it different grits.
Yep.
And then a buffer. And you're like, well, why have I got a buffer? I don't understand why I got a buffer, but it does make such a difference. If you use the different grits and then buffer at the end,
buffet.
It makes such a big difference. This will sound wrong, and I apologize in advance, but...
Go on then. Go on. I'm listening.
You're using the same amount of wrist action to get your sanding where you want it, but you're just changing what you're using to sand within the same amount of time. If that makes sense. So it doesn't take any longer. In fact, it may even be a lesser time, because you're sanding with the harsh grit, then you go to a medium grit, then you go to a fine grit, then you go to a buffer. And I've never timed it, but I'm pretty certain it's 100% the same amount of time as you would have with that one sanding stick. So if you've got the ability, pick yourself up a set where you've got different grits. Yeah. And just work through it and get yourself a buffer. If you haven't got a buffer, best person to ask for one is your female relative, whether it be a wife or a sister or whatever. They're bound to have a buffer in their kit of goodies.
Anyone who enjoys painting nails will have a buffer. I think one of the mistakes with sanding, though, is not sanding at all, or not even knowing that you can sand.
Mm.
For beginners, you know, they'll have a bit of plastic sticking out, and then they'll carry on. So no, you can get rid of that by using this wonderful sanding stick. Oh, wow. That's helpful. Oh, now all my pieces stick together much better.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other side of it as well, isn't it? Is that the other thing I've seen quite often from beginners is they don't have sanders because they're not in a starter pack. So they use their craft knife to run along the seam. Mm-hmm. A little bit too heavy handed can cause all sorts of problems for you and all that. And oh, who wants to do filler on a model? Just.
What?
Just horrendous. I just hate filler, because no matter what product you got with filler, you're still going to sand it, and you know it's not going to fill the gap 100%. You're going to have to keep going back over it. And
yep.
But a top tip, actually, thinking of this, if you have got a little bit of a gap, a very small amount of gap, and you've got a sander, sand it. Don't blow the dust off. And then run your extra thin back down the seam, and it will gather up the bits you've sanded off and fill that seam for you.
Microscopic level.
Yes.
Yes. Don't use your finger to run across it after you've done that, though.
No, that's all. Well, it does fill the gap, but it just takes quite a bit of your skin off.
Yeah, with your digit.
Yeah.
You were going to say about paint. What was the... Well, crikey. We could be all night. We talk about mistakes with paint. So what are some beginner mistakes?
Paint-wise, for a beginner, and I've said this numerous times, don't listen to what everything else is being said on every single channel or social media outlet about what is the best paint, because there are so many different things that you have to take into factor into what is the best paint and what you're doing, the temperature you're doing, how you're doing it with a hairy stick, an airbrush, etc., etc., etc. So my advice would always be, to a beginner, buy the products that's local to you and easy to get to. And now if you're an internet buyer, then yeah, that's fine. But I personally, as a beginner, would go to your local hobby store and buy what's there.
Mm-hmm.
The reason being is it's easy to replace because it's there.
Yeah.
You haven't got to chase around for it. And then bear in mind that your painting experience to start with will be frustrating. Depending again if it's hairy stick or airbrush, but just understand it is no different to making the kit itself. You have to learn how to use the product. Each product has its own little way of working. Mm-hmm. Humbro acrylics, for example, not many people get on with Humbro acrylics. It's like most things. When there's a negative, there's lots of people that don't get on with it. I'm sure there's hundreds of thousands of people that use it and don't have an issue, but when I first started using them, yeah, I had loads of problems with them, and I couldn't understand what I was doing wrong. I thought it was the cheap airbrush I bought. But really, it was just a case of learning how to thin them and get them to the right consistency, the right air pressure, la, 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 la. And the same with the old-fashioned method. I started off with enamels. And one of the reasons I went to acrylics was because I felt that while I loved enamels, obviously the fumes weren't so good for me, but I'd reached the point where I could only do what I was doing and there was nothing more to learn from this process, so I needed to move on. Since then, I've learned that actually the same thing applies, is that if you thin it and don't just do it straight out of the tin, you can get some amazing effects with enamels.
Yeah.
So again, it just comes down to learning how to use the products that you've got.
I think thinning is the thing. Slapping paint on way too thick.
Yeah.
And dragging it across the wings, dragging it across your tank, and then wondering why the paintbrush is leaving loads of marks and things. Using the paint straight out of the pot, because why wouldn't you, is a mistake. And of course, people don't realize they're making the mistake, and they blame themselves, and then they get frustrated about the finish they're getting.
The paint I use is because it's what was available to me, and I went down the road of model color. It's a great paint, very good for figure painting. Airbrushing is a bit of a learning curve, because you can't just squeeze it out of the tub and off you run.
No, I've never managed to spray Vallejo myself.
But it's a case of just playing with it and trying different consistencies. And I guarantee you, you'll do some shocking ones, then you'll do one and go, done it, I've mastered it. And the next one will be just shocking again. It's just how it is.
Because the wind's changed, or it's a Thursday.
It could be the temperature of the room that you're painting in is different. It could be that the paint that you're using has got a higher pigment level in.
Yep.
Not being funny, but who knew that, you know, one colour had less pigment than another color. Who would know that? You know, these are all things you learn.
All different, all set to stumble you, but also learning when to notice these things.
Oh, this is spluttering because I have a blockage here.
Or
it is splashing at me because I'm throwing my airbrush around and it's slopping her out of the cup
or something. You know, all these sort of little things you got to learn, like, oh, this is why, and this is how I fix it.
Like everything in this hobby, don't get so frustrated that you throw it across the room, because it won't help.
Well, it doesn't help, no. Unscheduled test flights are never a good thing.
Mm.
The other beginner's mistakes that I would normally come across when I was teaching people about the hobby, obviously the paints and things like that, yeah, and the glues and sanding.
Mm.
But also, don't cut all the parts off.
Yeah.
At the beginning,
yeah,
thinking you're going to save time, like, this is my first job to take all the parts off. That's a bad thing to do. That happens quite often,
yeah,
but with unsupervised beginner modelers,
yeah,
and it's incredibly frustrating because the person sat there for a good, you know, 10 minutes happily cutting all these pieces out, you know, thinking they're doing a great job. And yeah, they may have cut them all out very nicely, but they're going to forget which piece is which.
Have you ever come across a beginner that does that?
Yeah.
But lays them out on the mat like they were on the sprue?
No.
No, I've had that twice where someone's done that, and they've literally tried to recreate the sprue.
Oh, that's cool. That's all right.
Which is a clever idea, right?
Yeah, as long as you don't sneeze.
Exactly. Until you accidentally drop your sprue onto everything and it muddles it all up,
yeah,
which has happened. They took the next sprue out. As they were cutting the bit out, it hit the bits that were on the side, and that was it. It was the jigsaw.
Strike!
Please don't do that. Please. Now, if you've got that sort of mind where you want to take everything apart, what you could do is you could buy yourself some crocodile clips and some bamboo sticks and make yourself some holders, but then you would have to put a bit of masking tape on each one and number it.
Oh, Jesus. You could just get little tiny pots and put them in.
You could do.
But each step, but...
I wouldn't do that either, but...
Don't do it. Don't do it at all. Take the bits off you need as you go. That's it. There's no other solution. Stop it.
No, I don't think so. And it's funny you should say that, actually, because I was watching a YouTube video last week where someone had done, I guess it must be a section on the instructions and cut it all off and put it into little pots. So he had all the bits he needed.
Right. Is that Lego, though?
No, that was a model kit.
Okay.
Which I thought at the time, oh, that's clever, I hadn't thought of that. But then I realised as I was watching it, the person was saying, oh, yeah, these are the bits that I'm doing now, and took them out of another box. And I just looked at it because nothing was labelled, and I just thought, I'm not really quite sure how you would know, because you've got like five pots there and they're all for different stages of your model. Unless there's a very recognisable part in there, I can see that being a bit of a nightmare.
Yes.
You can easily tip over a couple of pots and all of a sudden you, oh, what bit went where?
Yeah. Carpet monster's going to be a nice chubby monster after that.
Mm. And while we're talking about dropping bits, actually, which I don't do, it's something that people do. And I,
you don't I, drop bits?
No. I do drop bits. And it's about dropping bits. Now, if you get frustrated with dropping bits, a really handy tip, buy yourself an apron. Now, there are different ways in which you can go around this. You can have an apron that sits on your lap, obviously. And then if you accidentally drop a bit, you can then look on your apron and you should be able to find your part. However, go a step further, I would suggest, which is a handy tip from Chris in America that I see him do. He's got Velcro on the end of his...
Oh, stop it.
He's got a strip of Velcro that goes underneath the desk, a strip that goes on the bottom of his apron, and he attaches himself to the desk. So it cannot possibly go on the carpet at all.
Listeners, I do apologize. Attaching yourself to the desk with an apron is going to be a recipe for disaster, in my professional opinion.
If you attach yourself with some screws and nails, then yes, it's not a good idea. Velcro easily comes off.
Velcro can be quite sticky.
It can.
Hmm.
Get the non-sticky Velcro.
If it was me and I'd Velcroed myself to the table, right, drop something, okay, I think I can see that would work, because it's always going to go, most of the time it goes towards you or towards me, and yes, it would clip it, but I know for a fact that I would forget it's stuck on, and I would go to pull away and the whole table would go and everything would fall apart.
I see where you're going. But yeah, don't bulldog clip your apron.
Yeah, wear a penny.
I recently had that disaster where I have to admit the carpet monster won. I still don't know where the part is. I had to scratch build the part in the end, which was challenging. Literally, I've cleared the bench. I've gone round and I've decided that although I've got my optimizers on, you know, full whack, do the old-fashioned method of using my hands and go around and touch to see if I can find it, can't find it. So I'm on the floor now with my optimizers looking at the carpet, which is incredibly dirty. Well, I didn't think it was until I had my optimizers on anyway. So yeah, then you're trying to sift through your carpet.
Sift.
And then my darling wife crept up behind me and went, "You all right, what are you doing?" Hanging my head, to which I replied very politely, "Oh, I've just lost a part, love." To which she said, "Oh, come out of the way, let me have a look. Very helpful partner, thank you very much, but please don't do that."
Aww.
The best thing to do is wait until the modeler has decided that walking away and screaming up at the sun is the best option. Then do it, because then they're out of the way.
My wife is amazing at doing that. I say, "I've lost a part. Don't nobody move. No one breathe." And then she'll say that the fantastic phrase that makes me chuckle.
"Okay, I'll help you. What's it look like?"
Like that makes a difference. If I say, "Oh yeah, it's a steering wheel," she said, "Oh, that's a shame. So I had loads of lamps and I had a wheel and a wing and an aerial." It's tiny, it's grey, and it's on the floor. It shouldn't be. Any tiny grey things you find, quite often she'll come up to me and she'll present me with a part that she's found during the day and say, "Is this yours?" And she, "Of course it's mine. It's tiny and grey and plastic. Yes, it's mine. Thank you very much." You are amazing. Speaking of which, I know we're kind of talking out of turn now, but I've been considering the flooring for my shed to be as anti-carpet monster as I can have it.
Is this a shed update?
It is a shed update. Do we haven't got a jingle for that?
There you go, you got a jingle now.
That's brilliant.
No expense spared here.
Not ever. So any expense. Yes, we're going to have off subject, but screw it, it's our podcast. So yeah, my wife and I are kind of putting the shed together, and I've been thinking about the type of carpet. So obviously a carpet monster lives in a carpet, so I'm not going for carpet, but I am going for a rug system. I can decide whatever color I want. I can decide whether I want shag or not. This is the carpet, not my wife. I can decide whether I want tiles or what, you know. So I think I've come up with a good solution, mm-hmm. and that is like a white rug, right? Okay, it's machine washable, right? And underneath that will be black rubber mat tile things. Now, when things hit that mat, the idea is that they'll just land on them and they won't move, because they'll have, it has like, it's like Hessian or something. It has tiny little hairs on it. So whatever it is going to get trapped in it and not roll across the whole mat. That's the idea. So that's my thinking. What do you think? If you could have your ultimate non-carpet monster proof carpet, what would you use?
If I'm honest?
Yeah, be honest.
I would probably use like a vinyl. I wouldn't have carpet at all.
Well, does it have to be any particular band or EP or
like you'd have in a kitchen or a bathroom?
Okay. What color and pattern?
I think I would go as plain as possible, and I probably would go for a creamy color, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That color.
Because it's just not a colour of sprue, is it?
I'm not going to go for grey. Obviously, that is the colour that you can't go for when you're choosing those sort of things. The opposite of grey, there isn't an opposite of grey, is there? It's either black or white. So I didn't want to do black because a black floor.
No, I wouldn't go black because that'd just be a nightmare. I would go for a creamy color personally. I mean, the carpet, I do have a very, very short pile carpet in here, and it is a sort of like a creamy color, or it was when I put it down. And I purposely went for something that was very, very low in pile. That's what I'd probably do, is I'd probably put a vinyl in here, or linoleum.
Linoleum, that's it. Yeah, one of the guys I watch on YouTube, the model making guru. You watch him.
Yeah,
he has, because he has sensitive feet, he has a very long shag pile rug underneath his desk, and that literally just stops anything dropping on it and bouncing off. So I've invested in the same thing. So down here between my legs is one of these.
Yeah,
and that does indeed catch everything that lands on it, and it's nice on your toes as well.
I might have to change my idea and thinking, because, yeah, I suppose if you've got a very smooth surface, it's going to bounce. And a smooth surface meant that if I couldn't physically see it, if I run my hand over it, whatever bumps there are is going to be a part.
I'm with you. What about you out there then, guys? Let me know, guys and girls, what the best anti-carpet monster solution is.
Yeah.
And maybe talk about it on next week's show. We need to discuss a few things. We need to go through some comments.
We do.
And we need to do a Walnut Challenge update.
Yes. There is a Mushroo update, isn't there?
Are we going to do a Mushroo Cup update to start with? Or stash or cash? So, people, if you have a kit in your stash that you have been umming and ahhing and undecided about whether you want to sell it or whether you want to build it, then let us know what that is and we will decide for you, and we'll have much discussion about such things. We did an entire podcast about stashing or caching, and at the end of that, James decided the ones I should keep and ones I should go, and the Vigan, I tell you, did sell on eBay for about £45, I think, now.
Nice.
So in my pocket for my wife to buy new shoes with. I mean, for me to buy new kit with.
I haven't put mine up on eBay yet.
But you will, and that's good.
I'm going to sell the ones we decided to sell.
Good. And then let us know what you sold it for and what you're going to buy instead. So, yeah, let us know, and we'll discuss it on the show.
Guys, if you don't, we can't really do it without you. So it's a call to action. And while we're talking about a call to action, if there are any subjects or anything in which you want us to discuss and have a play with, drop us a line. Tell us what your thoughts are.
Yep.
We have covered some. that have been suggested already, and we'll be covering a couple of others that have been suggested. So Mark, for example, who asked a specific question about a group that he was a member of, we'll tackle that too. So, you know, don't be shy. Let us know.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, we actually gave him some good advice, he said, which is nice to know. But what's funny is that some people want us to talk about things that I know absolutely nothing about. And unfortunately, I haven't got the time to research it to be, you know, feel like I have an expert opinion on something. But I can certainly give you my opinion for what it's worth, I suppose.
Yeah.
Please don't ask me to talk about oceanography or sine waves or something, because I don't know anything about those.
It will always be a light-hearted delve into it. Yeah, unless you pick a subject in which we know absolutely loads about. Good luck with trying to find that one.
Well, we don't do anything about whacking, do we? We don't. Well, I don't think we've covered that.
No, we haven't.
We've made loads of whack.
We've not covered lubrication at any point in any of the podcasts.
I think we did once. I think when we were talking about lubrication for your airbrush needle, you mentioned lube and I giggled.
I may have mentioned lube, yeah, but we haven't done a podcast about lube, and we don't talk about what lubrication we have while we're chatting. So
it's a whole podcast on lubrication. We should do that. This week we're going to talk about lubrication and just see how many people we get to listen to it. Well, there's a way of losing your audience.
Or gaining, depending on...
Dear sirs, I was looking forward to listening to your lubrication discussion. Only to find it was a little poppycock. There's no lubrication whatsoever. I will not be listening to your terrible podcast in the future. Lots of love.
Oh, dear. You have just a different clientele of complaints.
What are we doing? Oh, yeah, comments.
We do have a couple, I believe.
We have a couple that we can read out. Do you want to read the first one?
So our first comment's from Warren Dickinson. He says, enjoy listening to the show while driving to and from work or at the workbench. Thanks for listening and thanks for the coffee.
Oh, thank you.
Really appreciate it.
And so Brad has bought us three coffees. Three coffees. We're going to have to divvy that last one up.
No, just two straws. It'd be fine.
Have you ever drunk coffee from a straw?
Yes, I have.
Have you? Brad says, really like the banter between you two guys. Also, the recent Scratch Build episode was great. More armor, mates.
Oh, yeah, we can do that.
Yeah. Shit. Did you see that?
I saw her jump in.
Bloody cat. Scared the bejesus out of me. Yes, we can certainly do an armor episode. We could do an armor episode, and a boat episode, and an aeroplane episode, and train episode.
Best armor.
Well, yeah, best armor that we know of.
Oh, yes.
Excellent. Okay, put it on the list, James.
It's on the list.
Walnut challenge.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to guess you've done nothing.
Well, no, that's not strictly true, actually. All right, it's true. I haven't.
Oh. I was really hoping then, with less than 2 weeks to go, that you would have engaged in this.
Well, no. See, the thing is, once this podcast goes out.
Here we go. Yeah.
If there is any luck in the world, there will already be a live with Ballnuts.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll believe it when I see it.
We won't be able to edit in the fact of whether I did it or not, but the plan was to do it. So if I've done it, I hope you enjoyed it and I loved it.
That was really good.
If I didn't, I apologize, but I will do it.
Right.
I've not been doing pretty much any modeling at all for the last couple of weeks. So I give you loads of reasons, but I just haven't.
You need to do it and you need to do it soon because the time is running out. There have been some amazing builds.
Yeah.
Going in. Did you see Paul Gallagher's with the horse and the steam or the smoke rising with the Ukrainian symbol in the background? Did you see that one?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Oh, so good.
Wow, guys. You know, we've got 113 members on the Walnut Challenge group page, Facebook page. It's been so inspiring to see what people are doing. And I'm glad to say that I'm not the only person that is still unable to complete the build because Victor he's gone nuts. He's got his nuts on the bench with lots of little figures.
Yes, he has made some progress and he's getting there. Derek has put one up. I think he might have asked his wife to crochet him a little Yoda because he's made the walnut into a little baby Grogu carrier from that show that I've forgotten.
Mandalorian.
That's it. I was thinking margarine or something else. and it's a little crocheted Yoda inside a little floating basket thing. So that's really cool. Go and have a look at that.
Yeah.
It's fun.
That's brilliant.
Have you seen Christopher's alien one?
Oh, yes. Yep. Yes. Yeah, that's quite amazing as well.
I love it. I love that one because it's painted its gloss black, so it looks like an alien on the outside.
Did he sand the outside? Because it seems quite flat, doesn't it?
It does. I think. It looks like very, very thick paint, the way that it's kind of settled on the top there to give that kind of shiny look.
It's really, really clever. And I think that's the one thing I've really enjoyed about the whole challenge is watching how people's imaginations have just flown with it. Just been fantastic. So there still is time. And we may we may extend it, mainly for me, if I'm honest. The other thing which I just want to clarify, just in case someone comes across this, Ken has put a post up, great picture of some astronauts. Guessing it's recreating the scene of Aliens. It doesn't count because it is pistachio nuts, and we're not doing that build. Just in case anyone has any bright idea that we might want to challenge yourself further, no, is the answer. But it's a cracking picture, and thank you so much for everybody that's got involved. It has been absolute delightful to watch.
What I'm thinking is if you are at Telford this year or any model show, just pop your walnuts that you've made on the table and see if they bring any interest or any chat or conversation. And what we'll do at Telford, if you are having your walnuts there, we'll make a little map of all the walnuts, let us know where you're going to be, and we'll put that up there and you can go and do a walnut tour.
That'd be cracking. And obviously what I did then, we did challenge the IPMS. If you've got a table and you want some nuts, give us a shout. We'd love to see some nuts on your tables.
Yeah.
In amongst your other builds. Jeff Roberts, if you're listening, I am so sorry. I've just realised I have not sent you the nuts I promised. I will get in contact with you somehow and see if you still want them. Which was several months ago and I've forgotten all about it. I even got him to write his address on my phone in my notes, remind me to do it, and I just suddenly remembered.
Well, yeah, now you remembered, so send him some.
I will sort something out with a grovelly letter to say I'm sorry. So if you are listening, Jeff, sorry.
He's probably really hungry.
Those nuts were going to feed my children and everything.
What is it, children's squirrels?
It's nearly time. Well, it is time, but it's nearly time for you, Malcolm. It's the Moosaroo Challenge update.
Moosaroo Cup, the Moosaroo Cup. Let's talk about the Moosaroo Cup. Boom.
Woohoo! I love the fact that we have to go through the whole jingle in your mind before we can talk about it.
I don't know why I need to do that. I don't know. It sets the scene, doesn't it? Sets the tone. It sets the atmosphere, the ambiance to talk about the Moosaroo Cup.
The ambiance. Gagging to know, what's the update, Malcolm?
So far, I know that the kits are being distributed. Is that right? Over in Omaha, Idaho, Nova Scotia, or wherever the nationals are. They are being distributed down there, some of them, and some of them being sent.
I think they may have been dispatched. They certainly were holding back some to hand them out to the guys in Omaha for this weekend.
Some people are going to get them before others, some, which is fine. It's going to happen. I'm waiting with bated breath and looking at the news on the Omaha. Is it Omaha or Idaho?
Omaha.
I'm a ho. You're a ho. Todaha.
Omaha.
I'm looking out for the news on there to see if anyone gets their Moosaroo kit yet. But so hopefully by next time we talk on here, there'll be some proper updates about what kit it is. So
obviously there's been a bit of chatter amongst the podcasters trying to find some speculation as to what it is you're getting.
Oh, right. Yes. Well, the we haven't gone through the main email that we received yet, have we? Because we haven't kind of really started the build. So, but there were a couple of clues.
What were those clues?
One of them says, because it's supposed to be an out-of-the-box build, they just wanted to clarify a few things. So, for instance, it says, you can stretch your sprues to make aerials or rigging. So, yeah, something with rigging, maybe? And but also they also mentioned to use the decals in the box, and they did allude to there being several
wide variety.
Yeah, so they didn't think that there'll be a everyone will build exactly the same thing. Also, they mentioned something about metal.
They did.
It says we have indeed come up with something that will test your metalizer, so to speak. So,
And they also said yes, you can rescribe.
Great. I was really worried that they were going to leave that out.
As always, it's down to the builder itself, and I'm sure the guys have come up with something incredibly interesting.
I can't wait. Bloody brilliant little project.
I think it's a winged model, and I think there's every opportunity for you to not actually paint it.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Not actually paint it?
No, you could if you wanted to. Use tin foil.
Oh, blimey. Yeah, if it is a metal aircraft, then yeah, that's a possibility. Hey, do you know what, though? I'm not you. I'm not going to try something brand new and difficult for what is a very important build. So I'm going to stick with what I know, which is not much. Yeah, we'll see what happens. See what happens, eh? Do you know who else is... taking part, who are the other people in the podcast are doing it?
It is actually the biggest Moosaroo Cup this year because they have included the Sprue Cutters Union.
Built Sideways are in. Built Sideways are in there. Model Geeks are in there. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a giggle. So watch this space. Thank you to IPMS Hamilton and, of course, Lightspeed Global Distributing for the kits and sorting itself out and all the organisation that goes into this awesome little project.
And, of course, a nod and a wink to our chief Moosaroo Wrangler as well, because, you know, he always likes to nod and a wink.
Does he?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
I know you're not stressing about it.
No.
And you shouldn't be.
Chilled and zen like a Hindu cow.
You've got to mash it. I know you are.
Yeah. And also, might be one of the first builds that starts in my shed. I've still got my Blackbird to do, the SS-71 from Testers, the F-148 scale one. I've still got my 1/32 Corsair to complete. That's still in primer with a very nice layer of dust on it now. I'm waiting for a friend of ours, Steph, to get to the same stage I am, and then we're going to do a group build together on that. I don't know if it's going to be televised or not, but...
That was the Corsair?
F4U Corsair, yeah, it is. So I've got that one to do. And also, I promised my mum and dad that I would build the space shuttle 747 that we saw in 1983.
Oh, you've got that kit, haven't you?
Got it for my birthday 4 years ago. They ask me every time they see me, so I've got to do it. Next time, we will be just making conversation about other subjects relating to this daft hobby of ours. You have been listening, if you've got this far, to Just Making Conversation with
James Giffins
and Malcolm Childs.
Follow us on Facebook, where we post photos, updates, and other nonsense.
Find us on Spotify, Amazon Music, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Pornhub, and all of the others.
Let us know what you've just been making and what your thoughts are on the conversation this episode.
Thank you to the following supporters from buymeacoffee.com/JMC podcast.
Brad, Warren, Tim, Black Wife.
I think Warren's just a regular Warren. I don't think he should be aligned. It's not a story.
Did I say bad?
Yeah.
Bad Warren. Brad, Warren, Tim, Black Rifle, John, Julian, Chuck, Mark, Bakowie, Simon the Jersey Gent, Steve, Lee, Costas, Mark, Ray, Neil, Mike, Robert, Andrew, Drew, John, Mike, Jeff, Richard, Lynn, Gordon, and six others.
If you're out there and you have a very difficult and long name, please do support us. buymeacoffee.com/JMC podcast, because we would love to read out your name. But also, if you do show your support, we can give you a shout out.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Lovely.